I'm Jim Park. David Allen Punt is here, and joined by two gentlemen this hour. Gisele Sorley, you know. Gisele's with us every Thursday morning about this hour, certified financial planner and kingdom advisor from the wilds of Virginia, out there in Alexandria, Virginia. Also with us this morning, Chuck Day, who is in Chicago and is with Opportunity International. Chuck, welcome. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me back.
And Gisele's back in his yellow room. I just love that sunny yellow color you've picked for your office there.
Yeah.
That is terrific. It is positive and warming.
Keeps me awake.
And not very Norwegian. That's not the way I picture Norwegian. Do they have yellow in Norway?
It's actually a Swedish color, which is kind of bad. I work with it.
Are you allowed to do that?
I don't know.
Now that you've been outed as having a yellow room, will you be getting cards and letters?
Potentially, yeah. It's out in the open now, so I might have to pay the right, white, and blue.
Well, Gisele, you first introduced us to Chuck Day a couple of months ago, and we kind of got a primer, a basic introduction to the organization. Tell us some more about it, what do they do? How do they function?
Sure. Opportunity International is a microfinance organization. So the vision is basically help the poorest of the poor work themselves out of poverty. Instead of giving handouts, basically helping them get to work and transform their community that way. And Chuck is an attorney by trade, and his role is basically working with families that want to steward well the resources that God is giving them, and that support these folks in poor countries all across the world, and help the families be smart about their giving and so forth. And that's how we connected. Part of my role as well is helping families give tax efficiency and maximize their giving.
So. And Chuck, your organization celebrating its 40th anniversary, Opportunity International. I didn't realize you've been around that long.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Microfinance has become much more visible, say, within the last 10 years, but almost this entire industry got started in the early 70s, and after 40 years, we're actually starting to see some real impact in the world on a really scalable model. And Gisele touched upon the fact that families are looking to be impactful and to achieve real impact in people's lives with a small amount of money. And that's actually what attracted me to microfinance in the first place.
How micro is micro? When does it become mega finance? What does it mean?
Micro is, on average, our loan is about $150, which here in the United States seems like a pittance, but in the developing world, $150
in some places.
Yeah, $150 is a lot of money. And that is an influx of capital that a small, struggling business can use to become profitable and to earn more income for a struggling family and ultimately to keep their kids in school.
Now, is it typically an individual, an entrepreneur someplace in some small village in Africa, South America? Where in the world do you operate as well?
Yeah, we work in 25 countries around the world, and that's in Africa and Asia, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. And these are all individual businesses. The World Bank estimates that there are 500 million individual small entrepreneurs in the developing world who are desperately trying to earn more income to raise their families, but they don't have any access to financial capital that would allow them to have their business become profitable.
Is Opportunity International a bank?
In some countries, we actually are. The poor not only need a loan in order to kind of jumpstart their business, they also need a safe place to keep their money, because the traditional banks in their countries have a guard at the front door who keeps the poor out. So we literally build banks for the poor around the world, so that not only can we provide savings and training to them, but we can provide them with a safe place to keep their money.
So you do more than just fund business startups. You're really involved with the individuals and their communities.
Yeah, our goal is to provide completely comprehensive financial services to the poorest people on the planet. So as Gisle mentioned, that they can literally work their way out of poverty.
Gisle, you have a guest from Tanzania visiting with you. Tell us about her.
Yeah, that'd be exciting. I've never met her before, but her name is Esther, and she's coming from Tanzania to talk about farming in Africa. And we're going to have an event in a restaurant in Alexandria, so that'll be exciting. She has one little girl, I think 6 months, but she's very excited about the work she's doing.
I've got to ask a question with respect to farming in. I hope I don't offend anybody by calling it the third world. I don't know if that's politically correct anymore, but in poor areas of the world, is farming a business? Is it a way for individual families to survive, or are there farmers producing food for whole communities? Is that mechanism itself evolved in those areas?
There are some large-scale farmers, but the reality and the, you know, the daily existence for most Africans is 70% of Africans live in rural areas, and they are earning their existence by doing small-scale farming. And one of the great things that's happening in microfinance is, having gotten its roots in the urban areas, now microfinance is moving out into the rural areas, because that's not only where most people live, that's where the very poorest people live. And the challenge is, how do you take the microfinance model and adapt it to a small-scale farmer who's trying to feed his family and make the most of the land that he's got? And so that's where we're concentrating a lot of our efforts these days.
For as little as $150. And this money comes from private contributors, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're a ministry organization. We are a 501c3 charity. So the contributions that we receive from individuals and churches and some foundations and some very generous corporations, we take that money over to the developing world, and that's the capital that we use to fund our loans and to build our banks and to really focus on people who are living on less than $2 a day.
Gisle, how does this dovetail with the notion of stewardship?
Well, it's clear that part of God's will is to take care of the poor. That's clear in the Bible. So it's clear that we should be giving. People with excess money should be giving. So I help find opportunities for families that want to bless and want to take part of God's work, to find opportunities for them to give. And this is clearly an option for people. So I basically connect them with organizations like these.
You know, Chuck, lots of people write checks to favorite charities and to churches and to Christian ministries and feel good about that. It seems to me that Opportunity International offers a little deeper involvement than just writing a check. You can actually choose an entrepreneur to help, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. One of the great aspects of microfinance is that you're really empowering somebody to help themselves. And you can go onto our website and you can literally select one of our clients in the developing world whose business you'd like to support. And there are clients of ours from Tanzania, so that's the country that that Gisle's visitor is from, and from a number of other countries around the world. And you can see a photograph of our client, and you get a description of their business and what they need their loan for and how much of their loan has currently been funded. And so you can select the person whose loan you'd like to help fund and make a donation to that person. And you can then be directly involved in the life of that person in terms of helping them work their way out of poverty. And you'll receive feedback over time from us in the form of an email telling you that their loan has been completely funded, what they used the loan for, and most importantly, when they've successfully repaid their loan.
Hmm. How about repayment? Is that problematic for you?
Microfinance as an industry enjoys the highest repayment rates of any financial services in the world. The prevailing view had always been that the poor were probably the worst credit risks on the planet, and our clients repay their loans at a rate of 96%. And I think most banks in this country would be thrilled to come even close to that. So the poor, once they have access to financial services, are not only tremendously good at repaying their loans, they're also even better than we are at saving a portion of the income that they earn.
Well, that must not only speak to the integrity of these folks, but also the skill with which they execute the business, how it grows and succeeds. That must be a factor in that.
My experience has been that the poor are exceptionally creative. They are extremely disciplined. They place a really high value on access to capital and financial services because they've been shut out for so long that once they have access to it, they maximize every dollar to the fullest because, quite frankly, they've had to.
Mm-hmm. Mm. There's also opportunities to go and see this work. They call it an inside trip. So I'm organizing a trip in the fall. We're actually going to go to probably Dominican Republic to see this in action and see how the system works and get to meet the entrepreneurs and so forth, which can be exciting, which really connects you with where you give your funds.
Now, are these trips organized on your website also, Chuck?
Yeah, they are. You can see the list of the trips that we're taking. Gisele mentioned this trip to the Dominican Republic. I take a trip every year to Colombia with a group of Christian financial advisors, the Kingdom Advisors group that Gisele is a member of. And we do a trip just about every month. You can go to India, you can go to Africa, you can do a shorter trip to Dominican Republic or Colombia in our own hemisphere. So really, wherever, if you have a part of the world that God has sort of nudged your heart on, you can go and see it, and you can not only see the problem of global poverty, you can see part of the solution, which is the microfinance work that our organization does.
Chuck, why don't you talk about a little bit about the story of Al Whitaker and the founder of this organization and how he sort of came to this conclusion that this is what he was going to give his life to?
Yeah. Funny how God works. It turns out he planted the same idea in the minds of two Christian businessmen at the exact same time to two men who were living halfway around the world. One was a gentleman named David Busseau living in Australia, and the other is Al Whitaker, who was living here in the United States. Mm. Al was an executive with Bristol-Myers, and part of his job was to fly around the world and, in essence, help create jobs for Bristol-Myers. And his wife would go on the trips with him, and when he was in business meetings, his wife, who really had a heart for the poor, would go out and volunteer in the poverty-stricken areas of these developing world countries that Al was trying to, generate business. And then when Al was done with his meetings, his wife would take him out and show him what she had done during the day. And God really broke Al's heart as to the plight of the poor and the need for something to be done to help them. And so he would ask them all over the world, what do you need? Is it education? Is it healthcare? What do you need? And the answer came back every single time, we need jobs. Because if you have jobs and you can create income, people in these countries can treat their own problems far better than we can from the outside. And so Al really realized that job creation was the issue to resolving world poverty. And he looked at his wife and said, my goodness, I've spent my whole business career doing nothing but creating jobs. I know how to do this. So he quit his job at Bristol-Myers and then proceeded to use 90% of his net worth to fund our loans and to create our organization. And now 40 years later, his idea has helped literally millions and millions of people to work their way out of poverty.
So he really came to embody that old tale about teaching a man to fish.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is, his initial thought of job creation has been borne out not only from our work here, but the World Bank just published a study that's shown that in the 30-year period between 1981 and 2011, world poverty has dropped like a rock. In 1981, 70% of the world's population was living on $2 a day or less. And as of last year, 43% are living on less than $2 a day. And it's the first time in recorded history that world poverty has ever gone down, and it went down at a dramatic rate over that 30-year period. So while microfinance obviously isn't the only reason for that dramatic increase, it is also clearly part of the situation, because microfinance got started and really began getting traction during that 30-year period.
Chuck, does Opportunity International become involved with educational efforts as well?
We do, and when we talk about all the financial aspects of microfinance, the loans and the savings and all those things, it's important to keep sight of the fact that educating children is really the end game for microfinance, because our goal is to help an extremely poor family to earn enough income so that not only can they feed their children and feed their families, but they have enough money left over to pay the few dollars a month that are necessary to keep their kids in school. And that is a huge challenge for families who are living on less than $2 a day. But the reality is that once those children become educated, poverty will stop at that generation.
But I have to ask, what kind of school systems are in place for these kids in these areas of the world?
You know, usually what's going on is that there are two parallel systems going on. There are the public school systems, which are supposedly free, but the families need to have school uniforms, they need to have books, they need to have pencils, and sometimes those few dollars a month are just beyond the reach of most poor families. There are also small private schools that are being created and are growing in number all around the world, and these small private schools are usually created by public school teachers who got fed up with a very ineffective and bureaucratic system, so they start their own small private schools and offer a much higher quality of education to their students than are found in the public schools.
They really become entrepreneurs themselves then.
Absolutely.
And do you assist them?
We do. Our normal loan, as I mentioned before, is around $150, but what we saw with these women who are running these small private schools is a unique opportunity to not only create a growing business, but to also positively impact the quality of education in the entire village. So instead of making a loan of $150, we may loan this school entrepreneur as much as $5,000 or even $25,000, so that they can add on to their building, they can hire more teachers, they can create an infrastructure where the kids have access to good food and sanitation and good water. And so, in essence, we get a twofer, because we have now created and funded a rapidly growing business that is employing a large number of people, but we've also dramatically increased the quality of education in that whole village.
Do you get resistance from the public education arena in those areas, or perhaps from the governments?
We don't get it. The public school system is essentially uncaring. And as you alluded to, do we get any resistance from the governments? In most developing world countries, the governments really do exist to serve the top 10% wealthiest people in that country. And they truly don't care what happens to the poor people in that country. So not only do they not resist, they are sort of apathetic to our efforts. And when we indicate that we want to come in and help the very poorest people in their country, their response is, come on in and do your best, and we're not going to stand in your way.
Geesley,
you're suggesting then that Kenya, education in Kenya doesn't really care, huh?
What I'm suggesting is that
there is
the public school system in many of these countries is tremendously ineffective, and it's the private schools that are really generating the quality of education that these countries need.
Wonder if there's a lesson there for us as well.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say the public schools in this country are very ineffective as well. They just, so far they've still got the public employee unions backing them up and making sure they stay in business. How does what kind of success rates that you're hearing out of out of private schools in these countries?
The initiative to do the education is about 3 years old, so we're really in the first stages of doing the studies to see how it's impacting the students. But what we're seeing is that there's a tremendous demand for the private schools, in the same way that families there value access to financial services, they also tremendously value education because they see education as the method for their children to escape poverty. So they view these private schools and high quality education as being an extremely high priority for them. And as we provide the loans that help them earn more income, they are exceptionally dedicated to setting aside the money that's needed for their children's education.
Yeah, no, it's a good model. And along with that question, I guess we're maybe hitchhiking on it. What kind of involvement with the governments do you do, or do you have any involvement with governments, or either there or this one here in this country?
Hmm. The only direct involvement that we will have with a country is when we build a bank in that particular country, because we are now operating a fully licensed and regulated bank that is reporting to the central bank in that country. So we have to comply with all the banking regulations in that country. But the rest of our work is literally done at the field, at the grassroots level, where we are dealing one-on-one with our poor clients around the world. So, you know, from a banking standpoint, yes, we have to operate as a fully licensed and regulated bank. From a human standpoint, we're dealing one-on-one with our clients.
The I guess earlier you were talking about, or maybe you haven't talked about it during this program, but you have in other programs, you were talking about how easy it is to do and how easy it is for individuals to get involved. While we've been talking, I just sent Ralphie Abraham in the Philippines $25 for his computer service.
Fantastic.
He wants to expand his business. He's got a picture of himself sitting there, and he's got two employees.
Nice.
Yeah, and he's got two employees, and he's got a, you know, it looks like a little room. It's all inside. It's got to be air conditioned, of course, because of the computer stuff.
Maybe he can be your new IT guy.
Yeah, I like that
idea. Yeah.
Well, actually, David, he'll probably use a portion of that to paint his office yellow.
That's another good idea.
So he'll have like $24.15 left.
Exactly. Yeah, David, you mentioned the Philippines. The Philippines is an absolutely fascinating place in the sense that we have over 1 million clients alone in the Philippines.
Wow.
It is a country of, very high population. It has enormous poverty. It has a culture that is extremely entrepreneurial, that embraces hard work, and is almost the perfect place in the world to do microfinance. And it is absolutely booming there. And any of the studies that have been done on the effectiveness of microfinance, when you apply those to the Philippines, you are seeing extremely high impact in the lives of these families. And many of our loans in the Philippines may be as low as $80, just because that's sort of the level at which a lot of small businesses, you know, that's as much as they can handle for the first loan.
Now, does Ralphie see my donation right away, or my loan? Okay, I was just curious if he wouldn't get information about it until the full loan is funded.
And he will be able to see on a daily basis how much of his loan has been funded. Okay. And so you made him a happy man today in the Philippines.
All right, good deal. Yeah, he only needs $475.
So, well, I mean, hopefully that'll be funded quickly, and he'll be able to expand his business and hire even more people.
Okay, cool.
Gisley, are there some of your clients that have had experience with Opportunity International, and what are their feelings about it?
Yeah, one of the best experiences I've had is during the holidays. I usually give out these gift cards that they can go on the website and pick an entrepreneur. And some of the feedback I've got is that families do this with their children, teenage children, and the teenage children are so excited about being able to do this and pick somebody and follow along the progress. So it's really bonded the family and got the kids involved in the giving process, and that's my success stories. And then now in the fall, I'm going to take a few folks on a trip, which will probably deepen the commitment as well.
That's a great way to get involved and to get other people involved. Yeah. I like that.
I saw the gift card mentioned on here, and then, you know, of course I didn't have one, so I didn't fill it out. But where does a person get gift cards? Can you buy them and give them out, or are you the only one that has them?
You can you can go onto our website and you can actually purchase gift cards for whatever dollar amount you wish. Mm-hmm. And as Gisli mentioned, what a lot of advisors and people who like our work will do is that they will order a number of gift cards from us, and instead of providing a Starbucks gift card to their clients or their family and friends, they will provide them with one of our opportunity gift cards, denominations of $10 or $50 or $100. And for people who buy more than 100 of the cards, we will actually co-brand the card with the logo and the name of the company or the person that has bought them, so that their clients or friends or family can see that, you know, where it came from. And it really encourages people to think differently about perhaps a year-end client appreciation gift or Christmas cards that you send out to family, because it does send them to our website and it really opens their eyes not only to the plight of the poor, but also to something that's really working successfully to help them.
But what a great idea for a promotion for a small, medium, or large company to get together and do that for its employees during the holidays, or maybe its corporate anniversary, or at a convention or a gathering. What a great idea.
Well, we're always stuck for, you know, at this advanced age with my brothers and sisters, or I have one of each, but you know, what do you give people for Christmas or birthdays? Mm-hmm. Or I mean, it's just cheese and wine. You know,
they don't want more stuff.
And then what? Yeah, I mean, I have too much stuff now. I don't want more stuff. Just give me something I can eat and consume. And this is a great alternative.
One of Gisle's colleagues mentioned to me that every year their firm had sent Starbucks gift cards to a group of clients who the last thing they needed was more caffeine. So they were thrilled to have an alternative to provide to their trusted clients.
Yeah, I got a Caribou gift card for my birthday, and I mean, I guess you could say that too. I don't know that I need more caffeine. I'll drink it. I'll be okay.
Father's Day is coming up. It could be a good gift for Father's Day.
Oh, yeah.
Father's Day coming up, be an excellent thing. It'd be an even better gift for Dad to give to his teenagers in the house. I really like that idea.
Yeah, before we fade into the sunset, Chuck, I've got one more question, and I asked you about government involvement and how you work with governments, and I'm gonna backload this with a small speech. I'm running for county commissioner in my area of Minnesota. And, you know, and people say that we're deep in poverty and there's 15 to 20% unemployment in certain areas. How can we take some of the principles that you're using to wean these people off government programs and help them become independent?
Yeah. You know, without getting on a political soapbox, I think one of the things that we're learning over and over again outside of this country is that people have an innate need for dignity, for hard work, and for making the most of the talents and skills that they have. And that when we invest in that dignity and that hard work and that desire to make the most of what we have, that's when we get the best results. That's the way that human beings are just wired up. And sometimes here in this country, in our desire to help people, we may have actually robbed them of that dignity and that hard work and that appreciation for the talents that we've been given. And despite what may have been good intentions, we may not have done the best thing for the people that we were trying to help. So what I see consistently played out in villages halfway around the world is that if you empower people, if you level the playing field and you give people a chance to succeed, you're going to see good results. And you're going to see people who pull themselves up by their bootstraps and work hard and have tremendous pride in what they have been able to provide for their families. And it's a crime to take away that ability or for people to achieve that in their lives.
I think you're right in my campaign literature. I appreciate that. Thank you.
David's slogan up to this point has been a lutefisk in every pot. And
yes.
It just not.
And now
apply.
I'm officially off the soapbox.
Yeah.
All right, no, excellent point. Well made.
I don't know that that's a soapbox, and I think you should. I think that you're just restating basic truths. I was at a seminar the other night, and a guy was talking about natural law, and he said free enterprise is an example of natural law. Mm-hmm. Getting people out of the way to allow them to trade and buy and sell freely between themselves. And that's a natural law. All the other systems, the capitalism and socialism and everybody else taking a piece of the pie, even down to the, well, I'm not sure about Las Vegas and the house taking 5%, but you know, all other economic systems are not natural. But free enterprise is. Don't be ashamed of being on the soapbox. It's a good soapbox.
We certainly don't object to it here. It was good to hear the words clearly stated, and I think we support that idea wholeheartedly. Chuck Day is
go ahead, Gisela. Book, Dave, that you may want to read, that I'm about to read, that's called When Helping Hurts. That talks about sometimes when we have good intentions, we actually make the situation worse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know who the author is?
Yes. Let me find that for you.
You know, funny that Gisela should mention that. I've seen multiple situations around the world where a group here in the United States has a good intention. Perhaps they've heard that a particular area needs shoes. And so they'll spend a year gathering shoes and they'll ship them to some remote village in Nicaragua, and some truck will show up and dump, you know, thousands of pairs of shoes in the village square. And the problem is that effectively puts out of business the gentlemen or the small businesses that are cobbling shoes in that village. And then when those shoes have worn out, there's nobody there to help produce or repair the shoes.
Right.
So we have to be very careful at times in taking our good intentions and how we implement them in other parts of the world that may or may not be helped by what we're actually trying to do.
I think it's called head and heart working together rather than just
exactly.
The heart. Yeah. We could use some more of that.
Steve Corbett is the author.
Well, Gisela, Chuck, thank you very much. We've been speaking with Chuck Day of Opportunity International. The website, if you choose to get involved or maybe just to learn more about them, is opportunity.org. Opportunity.org. And, Chuck, I think we talked about this before. I would love to link to your site from our website.
Let's do that.
If you could send me a graphic or a logo, we'll prepare that and get that up there, because it's important that as many people as possible know you, learn about you, get involved with you, because I just got to believe wholeheartedly that this is the avenue. This is the maybe the most effective way, efficient way, for we sitting here in our comfy recliners can really spread the wealth and help at a fundamental level to change things in the world.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Just excellent presentation today. Thank you.
I'm looking forward to hearing back from Ralphie.
Yeah. Well, keep in touch with Ralphie.
You will.
Yeah. Good. Good deal.
And Gisela, thank you for bringing Chuck back with us. And always enjoy your contribution. And look forward to a chat again next week.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, gentlemen.
And by the way, Gisela's website, stewardsprogress.com. You can also link to there from our website, and we'll get a link up for Opportunity International. 12 minutes Chuck, before the hour on our Broken Road. Oh, sorry, David.
I just wanted to thank Chuck for the opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my pleasure. And for the pun.
that too. Music on our Thursday morning together here on the Broken Road from a river. It's called A Run to You.